And this is KPCW. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday, it's June 20th. Currently, we've got 54 degrees here in Old Town Park City, 58 degrees in Heber City, and on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning, Nate.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. Yeah, good morning, Wasatch back. Looking at a little bit of cloud cover out there today as well. Should see more sunshine poke through throughout the afternoon, so decreasing coverage. Highs today a little warmer with south flow continuing, 81 expected for Park City and then upper 80s for Heber. Again, quite a bit of sunshine throughout much of the latter half of the day. Overnight lows in the 50s as we get into Friday. We are going to look at temperatures near the same, upper 70s. Expected right near 80 degrees for Park City and 86 for Heber. Now, we are still tracking some of that moisture we talked about throughout the week moving up from the south, some of that monsoon flow. We're seeing some showers and storms across the far southeast corner of the state today, and that's going to surge northward. It's looking like we've got better chances now for some isolated showers and thunderstorms Friday afternoon for both Heber and Park City. So eyes to the skies on Friday if you're going to be out and about. We could see some strong wind gusts, of course, from some of these storms, and some heavy rains at times. It's about a 50 or 60% chance right now of seeing some of those move through throughout the afternoon and evening before they clear out into Saturday. Sunshine will return on Saturday. Should be a gorgeous day. Temperatures even warmer. Should be in the mid-80s for Park City over the weekend and low 90s for Heber. Sunshine continuing into next week. Should see temperatures kind of remain near the same. So high pressure is going to build in and dominate the forecast, just generating hot and dry conditions. There might be a stray isolated shower or storm over some of the mountain areas next week. But overall, it should be nice and sunny with temperatures near 87 for Park City through about Wednesday and about 94 for Heber City through Wednesday as well.
Okay. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Crandall Capital CEO Gary Crandall with an update on the Studio Crossing affordable housing development there at Quinn's Junction. Later on, Park City School District Business Administrator Randy Upton and a member of the Park City Board of Education discussing next year's school budget, which calls for another tax increase and plans to possibly bond for new athletic facilities. Finally, Park City Film Executive Director Katie Wang with a preview of some of their upcoming screenings. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio. Today's guests include Sabrina Schultz, Curator of Biological Anthropology at the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History, also author of the new book, The Human Disease, How We Create Pandemics from Our Bodies to Our Beliefs. Then a conversation with Roberta Casati, who talks about the cognitive life of maps. All of that coming up on today's edition of Cool Science Radio. Of course, Cool Science Radio every Thursday between 9 and 10. Right now on the phone with us with an update from Mountain Trails Foundation, we've got Executive Director Laura Anthony. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie, and happy Thursday, Park City. We've got, Mountain Trails. Alec is reporting that everything below Mid-Mountain is good to go. We do have some reports of snow fields still existing on the 9K trail and some of the northern-facing high drainages, so warm days coming up. Looks like we have reports of quite a few downed trees. Just know that our crew is working on getting those. That last windstorm we had was pretty devastating out there, I guess, pushing down a lot of trees. So we will get out there as soon as possible. So just some patience with that. We do still have a machine on Jenny's Trail doing some drainage work in the upper Loose Moose, drainage work in the upper and lower Loose Moose and Jenny's zone. So just be careful if you're in that neighborhood. We also have some machinery out in Round Valley. We're doing the Round Valley Express overhaul. And we've got dump trucks coming and going and some folks on machines out there. So again, be just really careful. I would just recommend, I was out there yesterday. It's not good for riding. It's barely good for hiking. It's very loose rock. We haven't put the water on it yet, so I believe that is coming today. So yeah, it'll be quite the process there out in Round Valley Express area. So best just to find somewhere new to hike or take the doggos for a walk. Got Basin Rec reporting that all of their trails were clear besides those that came down in the windstorm the other day. So they're looking like the upper Pinecone area had some blowdowns from the windstorm, and the Ridge Connector and Mid Mountain in the canyons area, they'll be getting to tomorrow. So kind of hit and miss with the blowdowns, and that last windstorm was, like I said, kind of devastating out there. So we're working on it. Looks like me at Wasatch Trails Foundation is reporting that everything is good to go. There are some blowdowns again on the WOW Trail. So they've got a crew out there taking care of that, and it looks like the Blue Sage Ranch Trails could use some tires on it. So if you haven't been out there, maybe look that up. She's saying they're on the east side of 12th South in the Heber area. We've got Corey reporting from South Summit Trails Foundation that Slate Creek, they don't really have a report on that, but the expectation is that there are probably blowdowns out there as well. So just a little patience while the crews get things cleaned up, and we'll hope to see you out there in this beautiful upcoming weekend.
Okay, do you want to mention the solstice?
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. That was not in our report, so I kind of read as we go. We do have the Summit Land Conservancy is doing a summer solstice in coordination with Mountain Trails. We're doing a meet us out there in the Round Valley Trails. So, look that up on our website or Summit Land Conservancy's website.
Okay. You used to do a solstice ride. I guess that's not happening this year. I don't know if you recall that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't know about that one. I haven't heard anything. Oh.
Okay. Kind of losing.
It's not a sponsored thing anymore.
Okay. All right. Hey, thanks, Laura.
All right. Thanks, Leslie. Bye.
Well, the Park City School District is considering a potential overhaul of its athletic facilities. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports that a bond may be needed to pay for it.
The Park City Board of Education saw details for a new athletic master plan at its meeting Tuesday. According to estimates provided by a consultant, the first phase would cost $7 million and would involve building two new synthetic turf fields for baseball and softball behind Treasure Mountain Junior High. The two teams were forced to practice and play off campus most of last season because of snow. School board member Andrew Kaplan said he wanted to see more data about field use before making a multi-million dollar decision.
So, I mean, I totally agree we need baseball facilities, but for $7 million as a phase one, I just don't understand why we're prioritizing two sports that are, you know, very, very low in terms of relative participation. You know, we have turf fields, people can play on turf fields, even if they're not lined correctly, or at least practice. You know, there's other solutions to that versus spending $7 million.
Board member Ann Peters agreed they should take a step back before making any big moves.
I say scrap the two teams until we can have a facility that actually can support them.
No one else voiced support to end the baseball and softball programs. Around 120 students participate in the two sports at Park City High School. Aging Treasure Mountain Junior High will be empty after next school year when the district transfers students elsewhere. The school board is considering its options for the property. On Tuesday, the board saw broader plans to build a sports complex on the Treasure Mountain site in addition to the baseball and softball fields. That would include two rectangular fields and tennis courts, along with support buildings and enhanced parking. That price tag is over $20 million. Park City School District Business Administrator Randy Upton said it could be paid for through a lease revenue bond, which doesn't require voter approval but would raise taxes. Board member Nick Hill also stressed the need to delay moving forward and gather more input.
I mean, that to me has to be a community conversation. Like, I understand the community said we want athletics facilities. Did they understand? We said that when they were going to raise their taxes and say, this is how much it's actually going to cost you.
However, during public comment, the wife of a Park City High baseball coach, Sarah Elder, urged the board to continue with the plan.
The upgrade of our athletic facilities is not just an improvement, it's a necessity. We have the responsibility to provide the best for our students, to prepare them for the challenges of tomorrow.
The board delayed any action Tuesday and scheduled a work session August 20th to discuss the future athletics plan in detail. Park City School District Chief Operating Officer Mike Tanner said the delay means any new facilities for baseball or softball are unlikely next season. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, back in 2022, the Park City Council approved a mixed-use development to go up next to the Utah Film Studios there at Quinn's Junction. A groundbreaking for the project then was held last October. And since then, not a lot has happened, but in the studio with an update, I have the CEO of Crandall Capital, Gary Crandall. Thanks for joining us, Gary.
Thanks for inviting me, Leslie.
Yeah, so maybe you can just start by telling people who Crandall Capital is and what you do.
Well, we're just a small family investment group. We came here from California in 2013, so we've been here now 11 years. And we've been fortunate enough to acquire the film studio and all the additional density that went around it. And we didn't think that what had been proposed was really what the city needed, so we approached the city about changing it and putting some affordable housing units. So just recently, as you mentioned, we got approved to put in 208 affordable housing units and 60,000 square foot of commercial space and about 140,000 square foot of townhomes and condominiums.
Okay. So, again, it was kind of like 180 degrees, though. You decided that you really didn't need that support commercial for the film studios that had originally been approved?
We didn't think that was the best thing for the city. We thought that with the great need of affordable housing, that that would be something that the city would be interested in receiving, and in fact they were. And our affordable housing is going to be for rent. It's not going to be for market or for sale. And so it's muchly needed. And we actually were able to work a really great program with the city where we're doing 60, 70, and 80% AMI. But normally, when a person's at a certain rate, just say they're at 60%, as soon as they make over that 60%, you know, they could go a dollar over by maybe working part-time or something like that, and then they have to move out immediately. We worked a deal with the city where actually they can earn up to 120% of the average medium income, and they don't have to move out. So this way they're able to stay, get an extra job, and save some money up so that eventually they will be able to buy something and move into their own dwellings.
Okay, so we saw a lot of groundwork happening at some point, and then not a whole lot happening out there. I did see a backhoe, I think.
Yeah.
Or am I missing what's going on? Because it is kind of up on a little hill there.
Well, actually, you're partially right. Last year at the groundbreaking, we had we did all the ground leveling and getting it manicured for the future development. And then winter came, so we stopped. Now, we just started this week. They've delivered a lot of the manhole covers, the sewer pipe, and they've actually started trenching, and they'll trench from the north corner near the freeway all the way around the movie studio in the back over to the south side and hook into the sewer lines over there. So we are now 100% under construction.
Okay, and then once construction starts, do you think you'll keep moving through the winter?
Yes, we anticipate that we'll be able to get all the groundwork done, foundations in and everything for most all of the project, and be able to work through the winter. We anticipate that it'll all be finished by about November of next year.
And you say all, you mean all 208 units?
Well, actually, we're starting with 104 of the units right now. We're looking to do master leases. We've met with the police department, the fire department, the school district, the hospital, Peace House, and several other groups that have expressed some interest in possibly master leasing some of that for their people. So we're in talks with some of those people now, and if actually they fill up or if they take the 104 fairly soon, then we'll start the additional 104 immediately. So it might very well be that we would start that later this year or the first of next year.
Okay, so the construction happening first closest to the highway?
Yes.
248, I mean.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We're going to have two single-story retail buildings that are going to have high ceilings, so they'll be very nice for retail business. And then we have the two affordable mixed units that'll have retail on the bottom and two stories of apartments. Very similar, practically identical to what we have out at New Park. We have 38 affordable housing units there.
So talk to me a little bit about what a master lease looks like. Is this something that these agencies sign off for and guarantee the rent?
Yes, they would say, okay, we want X number of units, and then they would be responsible for getting them and kind of pre-qualifying the people. It's really kind of tricky, though, because, like I said, if you're making, ours are at 60%, but say you're at 50% AMI, well, two people working at McDonald's would more than qualify. So it's very hard to actually fill the ones that are, you know, 40, 50% because of the way that it's anticipated that if you have two people in a family working.
Yeah, so the affordable units, not the townhomes and condos, I mean, what are we talking about building there? Studio apartments, one bedroom, two bedroom?
Yeah, we're actually having studios, one bedrooms, two bedrooms, and three bedrooms.
Okay, and then the townhome and condominiums, what, just a little bit larger?
Actually, they're going to be, those are market rate that we're going to be selling. And we've met with the retirement group, and they said that there was real need in the area that they felt that they could downsize, sell their big homes now and sell them and then downsize into our townhomes and condominiums are going to be in the range of about 1,500, 1,600 feet up to close to 2,000 feet.
Yeah. And as you probably have heard, what we're seeing with some of the affordable housing projects is the homeowner fees. Because they're not, because they're only rental units, are those fees built into the rent?
Yes, we can only charge up to a certain amount. And so we have to cover all those expenses ourselves. That's why we wanted to do some market rate to kind of offset all those other costs to make it affordable. We haven't asked for any federal credits or any benefits from the IRS or the government. Except we have asked the city to waive the impact fees on the affordable housing, and they've done that many, many times here for different people, and we anticipate that they'll do that with us.
Okay. And again, in terms of the market rate housing, any idea what that pricing would look like?
Like we said, those are going to be market rate, and those will kind of be geared by what the market's doing at that time here in the city.
All right. And then in terms of what kind of retail there will be, have you entered into any kind of contracts with different businesses?
We have several letters of interest in. Probably that'll take half of all, we're having the 60,000 feet, and we've probably got interest in over a half of that already. And so we haven't signed any firm leases yet, but we've had a tremendous amount of interest with restaurants and different things. And we anticipate once we start going vertical or coming out of the ground, then people see that it's actually happening, that we'll have a speed up in interest in that area.
Yeah, any sort of small market planned?
We would love to have a small market in that area, yes.
But nothing?
We don't have anything
finalized
yet.
Yeah. And again, you mentioned that you're going to be financing this all yourself. Why is it easier to do that than go after some of those federal tax credits?
Well, the main reason is it takes so much time. You're talking just in doing the financing with the government a year or two, a couple years maybe. So this pencils out for us, and we're able to put it together and cover it ourselves.
All right. And then what about parking? Where is that going to be done? Is it going to be done underground or?
No, it's going to be surface parking. It'll be very similar as far as a shared parking arrangement like we have at New Park, where the commercial people or the apartment owners or not apartment owners, but the residents there, they'll, of course, be leaving in the mornings usually to go to work, so those parking spaces will become available. And then as the commercial people come in to shop there, then those will be available, and then it flips in the afternoon where the workers come back and the shoppers go home.
All right, so is that surface parking covered?
Part of it probably will be. We haven't actually decided that completely yet.
And then the condos and townhomes would actually have some garage space, yeah?
Yes, they will. The townhomes will have between one to two covered or in garage parking, and the condominiums will have underground parking So they'll have their own parking on that side.
Okay. Sides. And then what about kind of a transit stop? Is that planned as part of this as well?
Yes. At the present time, there is no transit stop there. It goes over to the Ivory Homes, but it does not come by the movie studio. But that's part of the agreement, is once we get going that they will and make a stop there. And we have a roundabout where we'll build a bus shelter there for it. And also we're going to be connecting to the bike trail there across the creek there. And we're going to have a fix-it station there that people could come over and put air in their tires and do a little charging if they need to, and fix their bikes up a little bit, tune them up.
So at what point would folks who don't work for the city or the fire district or the school district know that there might be something available for them out there?
Well, of course, we'll once we get going and the activity starts more and more, we'll be publicizing that and taking reservations and try to get those filled up as quickly as possible. We don't anticipate any problem. As an example, our preserve out at New Park, it's 38 units, and we have approximately 100 to 150 people on a waiting list out there. We could bring all of those, but a lot of those probably wouldn't qualify for, because the first people, the first choice is the ones that work at IHC or live out in that general area or work in that general area.
Okay. So, again, November 25 move-in, huh?
That's what we're shooting for.
Okay. Let's, real quick, what's the status of the film studios? Are those getting used?
Yes, actually, we've been very fortunate. Well, we've had some difficulties. So, of course, we had Yellowstone there for 3 years. But then just recently, the last year and a half, I believe it's been, we've had a writer strike, we've had an actor strike, and now we're having a trucker strike. But we've been able to fill quite a bit of the time up with smaller projects. Actually, the Food Network's been there. They're coming in July to do theirs, and the Real Housewives of Utah was just out doing its promotional work, so we're staying fairly busy out there.
Good. And any resolution then to the Shea, Tony Shea estate?
No, we're still proceeding with that.
Still litigating?
Yes.
Okay.
You know what's going on.
My job. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, we just love being here in Park City, and this is a great community. We love working with the city, and we just are glad to be here.
Thanks so much for your time, Gary.
You bet. Have a great day.
That's the CEO of Crandall Capital, Gary Crandall. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. In the studio now with a recap of Tuesday's Park City Board of Education meeting, I have School District Business Administrator Randy Upton and Park City School Board President, I believe, Andrew Kaplan. You President, Andrew?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Let's start with the budget. Randy, this is your cup of tea here. Another tax increase and a Truth in Taxation hearing August 20th. Why is this needed?
So a year ago, we signed a three-year agreement with the employee associations. And trying to stay ahead of the game as far as wages, to try to attract the best teachers and employees overall as we could. And that three-year agreement, this year is a 6% increase in year two, and year three is a 6% increase. So we agreed at that time that there would be an increase this year and next year to help with that increase in teacher pay. And we've made a lot of headway. We are top in the state. And looking at what we're given compared to other districts, there are some districts at 5% and 4%, so it's comparable with the WPU that was issued. And we've enhanced some benefits, and now we're just trying to be able to attract and retain those individuals to have the best you know, situation for our students.
Yeah, what are those enhanced benefits that you're talking about?
So enhanced benefits is really just we've adjusted our PTO payout on a two-year pilot. So right now there's a termination benefit, we call it, when an employee leaves and they have so much PTO time available, they're paid out a percentage of that. We've increased those percentages with that in hopes that it's going to keep employees at their job and teachers in the classroom, and reduce sub costs as well. So address some of those areas to help with student achievement.
Okay, we've been raising taxes before you came here, so I'm going to turn to Andrew then. Andrew, how many years in a row has the board approved a tax increase?
I think this is the second or third time in the past 8 years. I'm not 100% sure. I think it's the second time. So what typically happens is the rate stays the same in Park City, and the property appreciation increases our revenue base, which totally makes sense. You know, housing has appreciated quite a bit over the last 10 years in Park City. And so people's tax bills have gone up in line with their home values, but the actual percentage rate that we have increased has been, you know, minimal over the past 8 years. The last time, you know, obviously there was a tax increase around our buildings and the capital campaign that we ran a couple of years ago that the community widely supported. And then I believe one other time when we raised the pay package for our employees significantly, there was a tax increase in one of the 2 or 3 years. So, you know, it's not every year. You know, there's a number of different levies that we have, including capital and M&O. You know, the M&O levy does, or the, you know, the taxes that go to the M&O budget haven't really increased all that much on a percentage basis, even though you and I, you know, we see our tax bills and we pay more and more every year, you know, because of our assessed valuation.
Yeah, and I think we had it at $154 increase on a home worth about $1.3 million.
Yeah, that's correct. And I'll just add, Leslie, so we kind of had something unique happen this year. Typically, assessed value appreciates, goes up each year. This year, we had a situation where our overall assessed value, or our regular assessed value, went down $750 million in value. And so we did have about $500 million in growth, which we are allowed to capture that growth, so that helps us a little bit revenue-wise. But our net effect on our assessed value was a decrease of $250 million, which is why we're doing the full 2.2 increments. We did earlier in the previous presentation with the board say that I thought we'd be below the 2.2 if we'd even just be level. But with not being level, we had to charge that 2.2. So there really is a chance next year as well, even though we're saying 2.2 is the estimate. You know, if assessed value goes up, we wouldn't need to charge the full 2.2.
Yeah, and that's what happened on the last three-year contract was years two and three, we didn't have to raise taxes because of the massive appreciation of property values. So, you know, we'll see, but we've planned for it and communicated that, and so it's not new news.
Yeah, raising taxes though is easy. Why can't you get into the budget and find cuts?
So I will say as a new business administrator here, this is the third district I've been in, and one of my practices within the first 2 years is to go back through the entire budget. As you have people come and go in different positions, sometimes there are budget requests and a budget amount's put in a certain program, and the new person coming in isn't quite sure what that's for, and they may not spend it in the first or second year. So we have been able to go back through the budget and look at some of those situations and kind of clean out some areas that maybe were from predecessors for certain projects, and have been able to pull some of that back. So we have been able to repurpose some funds in the budget, about $1.1 million, which has also allowed us to stay at the 2.2, even though overall assessed value has gone down.
All right. Andrew's Superintendent Jill Gilday, 1 year through her two-year contract. If she's not, contract won't be renewed, she needs to know by February of next year. As we've reported, she's making the second largest salary in the state, and that's with eight schools and, you know, a tenth of the number of students. Are you going to leave it up to the newly elected school board to make that decision whether her contract is renewed for another 2 years?
No, I mean, that's a decision made by this board, and it will happen this year. And we were actually going to do her performance review this past meeting, but because of discussions around the budget and some of our athletic facilities, we ran out of time. So we're going to do that when we come back from summer break. But I can say that we had USBA, Richard Stoll come in, president of the USBA, and help facilitate a review process this year of the superintendents. We had an outside presence there to formally do it, and I can say, you know, unofficially, the report card was excellent, and you know, as a board, we think that Jill and Randy are both doing a great job and fully intend on renewing their contracts and hope that they stay as long as they're willing to be stewards of education in this community. Her salary is at the top end. That's in line with how we pay all of our employees. There's a couple, you know, factors in that. One is her experience. She's been a superintendent for 20 years. One is her performance, which has been excellent. And one is the cost of living in Park City and the reality that, you know, people have to be paid more to live here. And that doesn't matter if it's, you know, someone who is trying to get a livable wage as a ski patroller, or if that's someone who's trying to be a teacher or a superintendent. And I think that's a reality of modern day Park City. So, you know, I don't see any issues in terms of the comp package.
She has a house. It's not like she needs to come in and pay exorbitant mortgage rates that somebody else would have to. So, yeah, sure, it's a little bit more expensive to live here, but she's not paying those costs.
Well, she pays part of the maintenance and the, you know, in the upkeep of the house. But yeah, this district bought a house, which is, you know, which was heavily criticized at the time by you and others. And, you know, it's actually turned out to be a great financial investment for us.
I didn't personally criticize that, Andrew. That's unfair to say.
Well, you pressed us on it on the air many times, and a number of people criticized us. And, you know, you constantly bring it up. So that's what I'm led to believe. But, yeah, it's been a great trade for us. We've made millions of dollars on that house. So, you know, that money alone that we've made by owning a piece of property has probably paid for the majority of her compensation over the years. So it depends on how you look at it, Leslie. I'd like to say that we have great value in our administration team, not just Jill, but, you know, her cabinet and the principals that we have here.
She would also be criticized again for another story in the, you know, the Salt Lake Tribune, one more case, right, of bullying and anti-discrimination, you know, and dealing with 180 cases being investigated by the Office of Civil Rights. There's no other district that's going through the same thing. So when you say an excellent record, and yet,
well, you're mischaracterizing that, because there are many districts in the state of Utah that are going through OCR investigations. There are many districts across the country who are undergoing OCR investigations, and that's because the rules have changed, right? The way that investigations are happening, the way that things are reporting have changed. And they've changed dramatically in the last 10 years, but also, you know, in the time that we've been students and educators. You know, now when people don't like the result that they get from discipline within a school, they take it to the principal, they take it to the superintendent, and then they go and complain to, you know, to the federal government. And that's a resource that they have available to them. That's why the OCR is there. But, you know, it's only going to increase, right? Because there are more people upset about more things today than ever before. And that's going to continue. And what that means is we have to hire more people to handle the investigations, to, you know, handle the student investigations, to handle the federal documentation, which is very cumbersome. And that means that we have to spend more money on administration, which you would agree is not the best use of dollars versus, you know, putting them in the classroom. But that's the world we live in.
Randy, the board also discussed a new sports complex on the Treasure Mountain site that could lead to more lease revenue bonds. My understanding, the board hit pause, scheduled a work session scheduled for August. Price tag varies $7 to $24 million. So what are we talking about here?
Yeah, so we went through a master planning with athletic facilities with an architect, just to talk about the overall Kearns campus and not just dealing with a couple of the main fields that we talked about in the board meeting, which was baseball, softball, but to meet needs of all kids and what's needed in total. Lease revenue bond is one of the financing mechanisms. There are other financing mechanisms as well, and so that was brought up as one of the mechanisms to be able to do something if it was, you know, quickly done. But there are other financing mechanisms, and we're always looking for partnerships and those types of things. So, I think the board's making a good decision not rushing into it yet. Yeah, there's a need. There's no question there's a need. But I think the board, in concern for all students and all activities, are looking at it to say what's the best situation possible for improvements going down the road. So,
Andrew, lease revenue bonds, as we know, don't give voters the opportunity to have a say-so in how their tax dollars are being spent. So would the board consider lease revenue bonds for something like this? It seems more of a want than an absolute need.
I think it really depends on the scope of the project. You know, I think this is actually the the total cost is going to be higher than even the $24 million. I would guess it's probably going to be some, if we do everything that's being discussed, right, which includes, you know, probably the addition of 5 turf fields, potentially a covered field, so maybe like a light field house type structure at Treasure, it could get into $30, $40 million. And so in that situation, I think we would have to make a decision about what the cost of financing is on GO bonds versus lease revenue bonds versus other financing tools. We also have to continue to explore what kind of partnership, if any, Basin Rec or Park City Municipal want to have. Because look, these are obviously the impetus is to give our student athletes the best facilities as possible, right? Whether that's baseball, lacrosse, football, et cetera. But ultimately, these will be community resources paid for by community tax dollars. And so as the plan gets fully fleshed out, we're going to invite our other stakeholders and partners to participate if they'd like. But, you know, I guess it's an inevitable thing that has to happen. It's just question is timing and overall cost. So that's kind of a non-answer to your answer. It depends on the scope, but I don't think we're in any massive rush to push anything through. This is it's a big project and it's gonna take some time.
Especially as we see our enrollment numbers continue to drop. Randy, I mean, maybe you could. I mean, I know the district posts on its website, you know, about 5,000, but I think we're about 4,100.
Yeah, we're about 4,200 this year. We're expecting a little bit of a drop. There's some developments that are going in that's gonna create some housing that may provide some extra students. And whether schools are open and closed is a decision by the board on an annual basis. And so, but even if we're declining enrollment, at the same time, we still gotta take care of the 4,000 plus students that we have and meet their needs. And there's no question that there's some issues. It's hard with spring sports being in a ski town. And the board's open to addressing those needs for kids to give them the best educational opportunity they can.
All right, also going forward with a teen center, and I guess I did notice in the reporting that we did that we're gonna be calling it a student center. And I recall a couple of teen centers that we've had over the years. Teen centers just don't get used by teens, I think, because of the name. So is that what you're trying to avoid here? I mean, do you think we're gonna build it and it will be used?
Yeah, I think there's a demand for it. You know, we have a wide range of students with regards to socioeconomic status, and we have students who are homeless. We have students who are living in the colony in beautiful houses. And so I think we have to be looking out for all of our student needs. And, you know, it's a roughly 1,000 square foot room that, you know, is going to be multi-purpose, but it's going to provide a space for kids to have a little bit extra resource and, you know, to be used during the class, you know, during the school day, but also, you know, after hours. And obviously we'll be supervised by educators the entire time, but it's a space that's currently being used as storage. We were able to get a $300,000 grant towards the construction. And so if there was ever an opportunity to do this on a cost-effective way, it's now. And that's why the board, you know, voted to move forward with the plan. And it's something that has been, you know, tried and with success in other towns in Utah. And so we're hoping that we have the same success here.
All right. And real quick, as Gary Crandall, before you mentioned, he's looking, meeting with Park City School District, among others, to get some master leases approved. Is this something you guys are going to move forward with?
Yeah, absolutely. We're excited. We, you know, I think we have to look at housing as probably our primary focus, along with, you know, the revamp of our athletic facilities over the next 10 years. And anytime we have an opportunity to acquire leases or housing units, either on our land or Mr. Crandall's land or anyone else's, we're going to be aggressive in taking up as much capacity as we can. We have a real affordability issue here in Park City. And if we can have leases that, you know, master lease agreements, which provide, you know, long-term housing for our employees, we're definitely going to take that opportunity.
How many units are you looking at?
As many as possible.
He's got 104.
Not that many.
Not that many.
I think there's a lot of interested parties, and so, you know, we're working with Mr. Crandall and the other stakeholders to find a good number. But, you know, we have demand and we'll continue to have demand because our employee population is aging and, you know, they're getting, you know, a lot of them have been tenured here for over 20 years. And so as we replace those employees in the next 5-10 years, we're going to need housing solutions for the new people who come in.
What's happening with or anything on the Highland Estates property the district bought several years ago? Because I think at one point we had talked perhaps that would be a housing development for the district.
Yeah, we continue to look at that. That's the, you know, the Pettit parcel back over by the back of Round Valley. We are, you know, continuing to explore that. I think we'd like to have that developed into housing for, you know, our employees as well as municipal employees. So yeah, I mean, it's still in progress, but you know, the two things are independent. We're going to, you know, they'll both be online in different times as well. So I think we're going to pursue, you know, Mr. Crandall's offer and then, you know, at the same time be working, on the Pettit parcel as well that we own.
Okay. I got to leave it there, guys. Randy, anything else you wanted to add real quick?
No, thanks for having us.
All right. Thank you. That was Park City School Board President Andrew Kaplan and Business Administrator Randy Upton. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. On the phone with us now from Park City Film, I have Executive Director Katie Wang. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so what do you guys got coming up?
Well, we're now in summer mode, as hopefully everyone knows, which means our regular weekend screenings are on pause until the second week in September. But we have some great films programmed throughout the summer, pop-up film screenings on the eastern side of Summit County, some stuff in the Santee, our Studio Ghibli Film Fest. So we're excited about that. We've had some good turnouts for the Ghibli Film Fest, which has been fun. And we continue the series on Tuesday the 25th, next week, at 7 o'clock, with Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind. And this is the debut film from Hayao Miyazaki. It really just put him on the map in outside of Japan and was kind of how he was able to launch Studio Ghibli, which then, you know, promulgated all these fantastic anime films over the past decades. But it just helped him kind of show the world how he just redefined storytelling through anime. I mean, he just has such an incredible imagination and ability to create complex storylines that, you know, are just, they're so compelling and thought-provoking, but the magic of it, I think, really, is that it appeals to film lovers of all ages. I mean, I can watch this with my 12-year-old, with my 17-year-old, you know, me being super old, right? But we can all enjoy it at just at the different levels of what's happening, right, of the different storylines and just kind of the depth that we all bring to it with our life experiences. So Nausicaä is the first, of course, beautiful hand-drawn animation, but it takes place in a dystopian future where human civilization is being overtaken by a vast toxic jungle. Princess Nausicaä, of course, the title character, is a fierce warrior, but she also loves all living things. And so her quest is to restore balance between humans and nature before all is lost. So just kind of this great story, very, very un-Disney. I have some people say that, like, oh, I don't want to see these children's films. Just, no, no, way, way more complex. This is not, you know, things that you may have grown up with here in this country. Anime is definitely more complicated than that in such a beautiful way. So that's part of our Studio Ghibli Film Fest. Want to thank our underwriters, Park City Municipal Corp and Park City Chamber. This is part of our Raising Voices film series, just kind of a showcase and celebration of, you know, Japanese filmmaking, Japanese culture. So that'll be a really fun screening on Tuesday.
And that's there's a ticket involved at that?
Yes, that's a paid screening. Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. And we have speakers planned throughout the summer. I was just speaking with one of our speakers, Professor Susan Napier from Tufts University. She'll be here later in July with Spirited Away. So we have other plans, you know, other films planned, because we've been getting folks saying, hey, you know, how many films you have planned? Is it all, you know, I can't come tonight, but, you know, is it, you know, are they all grouped together? And really what we tried to do intentionally was to spread the Ghibli films out throughout the summer, so that if you're out of town in July, maybe you're back in August, and so we can hopefully, you know, catch people throughout the summer with the different dates that we have planned. So yeah, we'll have more to come. There's Nausicaä, of course, next week, and then we have four more Studio Ghibli films planned for the rest of the summer.
Okay. Go ahead.
You go to parkcityfilm.org to get tickets for that, or show up an hour before showtime and get tickets at the door. Huge theater, so plenty of space there. And then we go outdoors. So our first outdoor screening of the summer will be on Thursday the 27th, and we'll be over in Hennifer Town Park. So if you are not familiar with Hennifer, it's right where the baseball diamond is, and they've got a little bandstand. It's kind of in the center of town there on the left. Beautiful place to show a film. We had a great screening there last year. But we are showing, it's Thursday the 27th. It will also be at 7 o'clock because we're using a mobile LED screen, so we can start before dark, which is awesome. We're working with North Summit Unite. So not only will the film be there for free, but they are bringing in free food trucks. So if you want to come and get a free meal with your family, settle in and see a great movie. We'll be showing Ratatouille starting at 7. And this is the story, this is a classic Disney story of Remy the Rat, who is determined to become a famous chef. And he and his best friend Linguini turn the city of Paris upside down in the pursuit of his dreams. It's rated G, so definitely for all audiences. Bring a chair, low back chairs, blankets so you can sit outside. We'll also have the film with Spanish subtitles. So for our Spanish-speaking community members, we'd love to have you come out and join us for that. I want to thank Summit County RopTax for helping us bring that great screening to here to our community.
Okay, so are all of the ones that are kind of off-site, the one in Colville and Hoytsville and Camas, are those all outdoors?
Yes, yep. So all of our screenings that are, actually all of our outdoor screenings through the summer, we haven't planned anything yet that's paid, are free screenings. So yeah, we'll be out on Eastern Summit County, a couple different locations throughout the summer, all free. And also what's really nice is they'll have free food trucks. So North Summit Unite and Summit County Behavioral Health have been able to get some grant funding to be able to make that resource available to the community. We'll have different food trucks each time at each location. So you can just check our website at parkcityfilm.org and see what food is being served. But really the idea is to bring the community together. And, you know, certainly film is a great way to convene folks, but, you know, it's dinner time. So let's make it a little easier and bring some free food for folks as well. And they can sit down. The food trucks will be around for about an hour, so 6:30 to 7:30. So come a little bit early so you can take advantage of that, and then of course settle in to see a great film and with your family and neighbors.
All right, and so the rest of the screenings that are at in Park City, those will be on the library field.
Yes, yep, we'll be back in June. July. I know, summer's going by so fast. We'll have Kung Fu Panda 4 on the library patio in July, and then in August we're bringing A Million Miles Away, which is about a Latino astronaut, and we'll be showing that one in Spanish.
Okay. All right. But no more drive-ins that you had tried a few years.
We are still working on doing, so last year we were not able to go to UOP, and that's much the same this year, just they're so busy, which is great for them, just not great for us in terms of planning around them. It's too late in the day. But we're trying to go back to Deer Valley, which we did very successfully last fall with a couple of ski movies. And so the plan is September, October timeframe to bring in kind of the new wave of ski films, kind of outdoor action adventure films that we bring in that location. And people love it. I mean, they've been going to restaurants locally, you know, taking the bus, bringing a chair, obviously cars. We had some great setups last year. Someone brought a pizza oven. So, you know, the bar is set high if you're going to bring a picnic with you for those films. But yes, so to be announced, but we are working on that for the fall.
Okay, anything else you want to mention?
I do want to mention, because I always forget, and I apologize, is the Studio Ghibli films are all shown in Japanese with English subtitles. And if you have not seen the Ghibli films in Japanese, it is an amazing experience. And so I do recommend that even if you've seen some of these films before, but you've seen them in English, come see them in Japanese in the original. And it's a different experience. It's the way that they translate the dialogue. It's so immersive, and it's just a beautiful way to experience Miyazaki's art. So we're really excited about that. But check out parkcityfilm.org. You can get tickets, see what other films we have coming up. As I said, we have speakers. Professor Napier from Tufts is like the world expert on Miyazaki, and she's amazing. So we're really excited to have her come to our town in a couple weeks. So,
okay, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Hedy Wang is the executive director of Park City Film. You can find out more by going online to parkcityfilm.org. Well, since January 1st, Utah has seen more than 270 wildfires. When hot and dry weather across the state, Utah Fire Info says that nearly 70 fires sparked just this week, about 50 of those human-caused. This year, the state has seen an increase in preventable fires. Humans have sparked about 220 brush fires. That's compared to 72 human-caused fires in 2023 and 193 in 2022. Right now, the two largest fires in the state are in Beaver and Duchesne counties. Utah Fire Info says that the Little Twist Fire in Beaver County sparked June 13th and has burned more than 2,300 acres. The June 17th Big Draw Fire in Duchesne County's Uinta Basin has scorched more than 450 acres, both fires just at 10% containment. And Utah's new National Hockey League team, the Utah Hockey Club, has named its president of operations. The Salt Lake Tribune reporting Smith Entertainment Group hired longtime agent Chris Armstrong as the team's president and alternate governor. Armstrong has spent the past 14 years with the Wasserman Group, where he worked as the executive vice president for talent, innovation, and strategic development. He helped build the firm and acquisition strategy of the company's hockey practice 6 years ago. Armstrong played hockey at McGill University in Montreal, Canada, and served on the program staff where he did amateur scouting for McGill in the Ontario Hockey League.